this reminds me of my first experience in radio. It was back in the early 80s.
People with disability and mental health.
There's always controversy with us.
The mysteries of the mind and consciousness.
And we might get to the bottom of something, or we might start something new.
We're going to run the gamut and we're going to have a good time.
Waking Braves. No, not Waking Braves. We're Breaking Waves.
Breaking Waves?
Breaking Waves.
Breaking Waves.
Welcome back, folks, to the John and Riley Show. How you doing, Riley?
Good, John. How are you?
Not bad.
We're back in the driver's seat to bring you an episode of our spin on Breaking Waves.
The show for the neurologically divergent.
The topic of today is fantasy.
And in the background, you're listening to a classic piece of 80s post-punk, Flesh for Fantasy.
That's right, Billy Idol.
The word fantasy, what are the origins?
Well, like everything, it comes from Greek, fantasien, to make visible, and the Greek phantasia, imagination, appearance. And we've got the Latin and Old French fantasize, fantasy, late Middle English, so there you go. But the definition of fantasy, according to what's shown on Google from Oxford, is the facility or activity of imagining impossible or improbable things. But then they also have a fanciful mental image, typically one on which a person often dwells and which reflects their conscious and unconscious wishes. So the plural noun would be fantasies.
Okay, so that kind of makes sense of the definition of making things visible. I guess it means to be able to visualize something imagined. Mm. That kind of makes sense.
They also,
because making things visible doesn't really seem like the way that we use that word.
That's true.
In common usage these days, it's more something, a complete imagination, hallucination, or a dreamt up, fictitious.
Yeah. And that brings us into the other similar definition they use, or way to use it, for dream or daydream. An idea with no basis in reality. For example, it is a misleading fantasy to suggest that the bill can be implemented.
Yes, it's a somewhat frivolous endeavor, perhaps. fantasy, daydreaming.
Yeah, yeah. You know,
certainly in my memory, I first came across the idea of, or the word really, via Walt Disney and Fantasia, which was a project started by Disney way, way back, and was a musical with the musical greats, classical greats.
Yeah.
And was meant to be something, I think, and in fact it was more than just a cartoon. They had great aspirations for this project.
Yeah.
Originally, it was based on the mythical story of the Sorcerer's Apprentice, which is the story I remember most vividly.
Yeah, that's the most iconic segment for sure, with Mickey Mouse and the brooms.
Well, apparently Mickey Mouse's profile was starting to wane at this period of time, and according to the wikis, this is why Disney decided to use Mickey Mouse as the central character, to try and boost his profile and his popularity. And then they basically extended the whole idea into a much bigger project that had other parts to it. But I remember getting a book. My parents went to America when I was a little kid, and they brought back these two bound copies of the Disneyland, and Fantasia was a big part of that. And I remember the pictures and that story of the Sorcerer's Apprentice. I loved it.
The original Fantasia movie. It came out way back in 1940, I believe. There was a follow-up or another undertaking of Fantasia, which was Fantasia 2000, which came out when I was little, and that one was had its moments. There's a Donald Duck Noah's Ark segment, which was quite good, I recall.
Yeah, there were lots of other... I remember that book had lots of other stories, but they were mainly your classics like Sleeping Beauty and...
Snow White. So this book was synonymous with your childhood ideas of fantasy, John.
Well, it was really the... I suppose there was a bit of Disney on telly back then in the late 60s and early 70s. Yeah, books were where it was at for storytelling back then. Well, it's another word for fiction, isn't it? But it has a different twist to it.
There's the literary genre in itself of fantasy, which we can talk about as well, but have you heard of, like, fantasy football and fantasy sports?
No.
Yeah, so this is not my area because I'm not a gamer or a sports kind of guy, but it's interesting that it's prominent enough to garner being on the main thing of Google, but they say denoting a competition or league in which participants select imaginary teams from among the players in a real sports league and score points according to the actual performance of the players. Example, he's my second round draft choice in fantasy baseball this year. So you hear people talking about playing fantasy, like fantasy football. They have these like fantasy sports leagues.
Oh, world's your oyster, I guess.
Yeah.
If you want to fantasize.
Yeah, the internet has accelerated that. Yeah.
The idea of fiction is everywhere, but fantasy less so. I think as far as a category goes, I think most people are familiar with the idea in terms of the DVD store of old or the common bookshop that have these different sections, and fantasy pops up with sci-fi. It seems to be where it lives.
Yeah, they combine them.
And probably for most people, that's the only place you really come across the idea is when you're in the bookshop walking past the sci-fi fantasy. And what are you confronted with but pictures of dragons and, you know...
warriors and wizards.
And beasts flying through the air.
Yeah.
And, really, I guess Tolkien.
Yeah, yeah.
Lord of the Rings. Unworldly or... out of this world creatures.
Yes.
And situations.
Yeah. I was thinking recently or not that long ago about the idea of that a lot of the time the science fiction genre will deal with the idea of mankind's progress and ambition. So whether it's through robots or, you know, space travel or going out and meeting aliens or whatever it might be, a lot of it's to do with ideas of like technological advancements of what humans can create, whereas the fantasy genre is often about the human characters, if there are indeed human characters, they'll be tapping into aspects of reality or nature that already existed. So a lot of the time they're more about this idea of like the ancient magic or ancient wisdom or forces and these kind of things. So it's just something I've noticed, although I definitely as a kid, I was more inclined towards fantasy, I would say, than sci-fi.
Fantasy is kind of more fantastical, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's different from just fiction. Like, fiction is just anything that's not, you know, anything that's made up.
Yeah.
Is fiction. But fantasy is what?
Well, it's a genre that is often set in, like, another world, although not always. But if it is set in what's meant to be our world, I guess the fantasy aspect will be denoted by, you know, very magical kind of things happening or otherworldly kind of... experiences, supernatural kind of stuff.
I guess cartoons are a kind of a manifestation of a fantasy.
Mm.
Because they're so obviously not real.
Yeah.
I mean,
and
there's no confusion when you watch a cartoon or read a comic book that you're not stepping into. It's an unreal situation.
That's true. I think some fantasy people, like filmmakers working in the genre of fantasy, can fall into a bit of a trap of, in this day and age anyway, they can be overly concerned with trying to make sure things look realistic. And from my point of view, I think the genre of fantasy, when depicted in art, there should be more room for it to be a bit more abstract or dreamlike, a bit more interpretive. I remember Peter Jackson, there was a bit of a controversy when he made that first Hobbit movie because he did something weird with the frame rate because he was trying to make it look as realistic as possible. But his attempts to do that ended up rendering the picture to actually, it made things look more fake. It looked like the shots of like a behind the scenes documentary kind of thing, and you could tell all the makeup and the staves and everything were props and those kind of things. So whereas when you go and watch like a fantasy movie from half a century ago, it's going to be shot in a way that obfuscates some of those details. You know, there was a whole conspiracy theory around, or an urban legend rather, around this bit of background, kind of shadow in The Wizard of Oz. And people, there was this urban legend, people would say, oh, it's actually one of the dwarves hung themselves and something. But then when they did like the digital remastering and you got to see the picture more clearly, you could see that actually this thing in the background was a giant bird. So what I'm saying, I suppose, is the really harsh modern digital cameras, you know, and filmmaking techniques where you can see all the pores on the person's face and everything. That's kind of such clarity, such detail can, in a way, I think, have a diminishing effect on fantasy. Yeah, I wish people were more comfortable with letting things look like a fantastical kind of world rather than imposing our idea of what reality should look like on a fantasy setting. But that's just my little rant.
Is this the real life? Is this just fantasy? Caught in a landslide, no escape from reality.
Caught in a landslide, escape from reality. So is that what fantasy is, a sort of escape?
Yes, it can be. And it's interesting how from a young age we find the idea of fantasizing and escapism to be, we find this idea often demeaned or dismissed by
that. Yeah, like daydreaming.
Yeah.
It's like you get a clip under the ear for that.
That's right.
Pay attention. Stop, you know.
I think
daydreaming.
Yeah, as a kid I had a very active fantasy world that I was working on, but you know, that was subject to being discouraged at times because of its
Well, the wonders of childhood. I mean, that's truly one of the wonderful things about being a child is your ability to imagine and play.
Yes.
The fantasy worlds that you create. I didn't need toys when I was a little kid. It was like I used to create the whole scenarios.
Yeah.
Spaceships or submarines, and it was all imagined.
Yeah.
And you kind of lose that.
Yeah, you do.
At some point, we get locked into this real world.
Yeah.
And, you know, but often things happen that lead us to question this real world that we're presented with by the media, by entertainment, by the news.
Yeah, it's not as a clear-cut dichotomy between fantasy and reality, between fiction and non-fiction, as what we're told when we're kids, because as is shown to us, you know, in school, like Napoleon said, history is a set of lies agreed upon, and we're introduced to the idea that the winning side writes the history books. And so when it comes to supposedly non-fiction accounts of things, of course, they can be subject to all sorts of biases for various different reasons, that the truth would be twisted. And then there's also the idea that there's certain things, certain truths that can't be stated overtly for fear of, you know, compromising that person who wants to reveal it. But then that person might put the truth into a fictitious story as a form of allegory, as a theme, as like a hidden meaning to be unpacked.
Yes, and I think as all good readers eventually discover, exactly what you're saying there is that you might be allowed to tell the truth in all kinds of areas and subjects, but you're always allowed to tell a story. Mm. And as long as it's a piece of fiction, it's fine.
Yeah.
You'll probably find more factual information in the fictional sections of bookstores than you will in a non-fiction section, perhaps. Certainly the wonders of the mind, it doesn't seem to need a rest in the real world that we live in while we're awake. There's confusion sometimes about what's fantasy and what's fiction and what's not. But when we're asleep, you know, our body needs to rest, but it appears our mind doesn't. It just ticks on the whole time.
Mm.
It's 24/7, and while your body's resting, your mind's busy. But what's going on there? It's certainly not what we would call reality. Our dreams are, by definition, fantasy. But there is some kind of strange connection to our real lives.
Yes.
And, you know, sometimes the distinction blurs for us at certain stages of our lives, I think. We start to question our ideas of what's fact and what's fiction.
Yeah. And I'm sure you've had times, John, when perhaps, you know, maybe you haven't been doing so good in your life or something is going on for you, but you've been able to find some kind of sense of enjoyment and escape within fiction, whether it's a really great book or a great show or movie or something like that. A friend of mine, I recommended to her to start watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and she was thanking me for how much of an effective imaginary world it was to get lost in with the stories and those characters and everything. That she found it to be something that helped her through a difficult time. And so, you know, fantasy, it's a very powerful thing.
So you'd have to say that there's definitely a connection between the ability to imagine or fantasize and the human ability to create. There's some link between creation and our imagination.
That's right. When people talk about having a dream, you know, as in I have a dream of something, and there's also the spiritual aspect where some spiritual people would say that which is imagined influences reality. And so there's different spiritual ideas and practices around these ideas of manifestation, around creating the reality that you want, that I believe begins in the fantastical realm in your mind.
Yeah, I guess if you can't imagine something, then you can't even ever create it.
That's an interesting idea. Yeah, I'll have to think about that.
Well, I know, probably, you know, we spontaneously do things, the cause and effect of that, but, yeah.
No, it makes sense.
Well, in effect, when you're doing something authentic, creating something musically or where you're writing, it's not really coming from anything pre-existing. You're creating something new.
Mm.
I think one goes with hand in hand with the other.
Yeah.
And perhaps our great gift as a being is this ability to fantasize and create. And we create wonders, and unfortunately, we create horrors.
That's very true.
And of course, the thing that comes to mind is war. And I think that a war is something that relies heavily on people's ability to be scared by fantastical things, by scary weapons and big explosions. And
I mean, when you think about it, there's even the term the theater of war. So that's a clue right there.
Absolutely. Like a stage play being played out.
Yeah, and we have these certain narratives about, each respective side. I mean, this is the sort of classic allegory, but in a war, you know, the two warring factions will both be invoking their god or gods to, you know, cut down their enemies. So,
and one of the ways that that armies do this is by trickery. And I remember stories, one story about the Second World War when a lot of bombing was being done by both sides. And they did all this visually. They didn't have the sophisticated electronics that we have now to fly. It was all basically done with compasses and by looking for landmarks. And what our forces did was they built models of towns away from where the town was. It was like they'd build a scale model of the base they were on, but it was only the tenth of the size. But the thing is, they worked on the idea that from, you know, a few thousand foot up, they couldn't really tell.
Mm.
They were tricked. So they would see these little miniature versions of what they was their objective to bomb, and they would bomb the wrong place. So they'd turn all the lights off in the real base and build this little tiny one. This is like they built wooden tanks, you know, during the Second War, all kinds of wooden aircraft and stuff to trick the surveillance planes into thinking they had more or less, basically to deceive. And I think there's a lot of deception goes on in warfare, probably the biggest part of it. Not only to the two sides trying to deceive each other, but also the deception of the populations of the people that have gone to war. There's a lot of deceit in the whole activity. And I think the reason why, you know, I think things have changed and people are becoming wise to these tricks. I think it would be difficult for them to introduce, say, national service now.
Yeah, definitely.
Even though they talk about it endlessly, I'd like to see them try it. Mm. I don't think it would work out as well as it has done
That's
in the
right.
past.
Yeah.
And we were queued up in our millions to go and be slaughtered, you know, in more naive times.
Mm. Yeah, that's true. Of course, sexual fantasies are just a part of our nature, and this is something that is tapped into, exploited by the culture in which we live through advertising, entertainment, the sex industry, pornography. I mean, it's all trying to harness that and present a lot of the time an idealized version. You know, you're going to be, if you're watching like movies and TV shows, then yeah, the people in the movies are going to be more like, they're going to be better looking than the average people that you're going to run into on the street. You know, the same goes for the other areas. But there's an even greater potential for people to indulge their fantasies and go further into a sort of atomized, solipsistic existence with the AI girlfriend thing. I was having a little experiment with some of the AI that's out there, and it's pretty good. And I'm sure the technology that'll get rolled out is only going to get more sophisticated. But then there's also, you were mentioning, John, the aspect of the dolls as well, like the, which is bringing things more into the physical reality.
Yeah, those sex toys, particularly the ones they're making now, are incredible. They look very lifelike, but it is kind of weird, isn't it? Because, you know, if you're having sex with a rubber doll, it's really, there's not much of it is actually real. It's the fantasy component of it is the majority of the experience.
Yeah, testament to the power of the imagination.
Well, it's such a weird thing because, you know, sex is such a, it's a practical thing, you know. We do it to make babies, and we do it also to express our feelings for one another and emotions like love. And really, the way it's packaged and sold and presented at the moment is almost completely...
inverted.
Fantasy, it's not really a real thing.
Yeah.
It's like this, I mean, it's a dream space you enter, you know, particularly like online engagement in any kind of sexual, what was I trying to say?
Avenue. I mean, when you think of it as well, the having like a profile on a dating app is kind of creating a little avatar in a way, like it's like creating an idea of you that's presented or portrayed in that context. But yes, that's just part of the deal, it seems. You know, yeah, people see something they like and they'll fantasize about that when it comes to sex. And I think, I also wanted to mention as well that I think that for a lot of young people, and I'll just say in particular men, because maybe men are a bit less imaginative maybe in this area, but there's an issue where pornography will have a diminishing effect on that muscle, you know, of creating your own fantasies. If the person develops getting used to using porn, then their own facility for creating the fantasies in their head is not going to be as sharp, and it's something to re-hone or re-establish, I guess.
Well, that's an interesting point. It's as, where is the fantasy coming from? Are you creating it, or is it being implanted from elsewhere?
Yeah, yeah.
Are you having your fantasy, or are you having someone else's? I think we like to pick up other people's fantasies.
Yeah.
I think we rub off on each other a little bit like that.
We do. Yeah, for sure.
But, as usual, the clock is ticking. We've come to the end of our show.
Well, folks, thank you again for joining us. And
we hope
you will join us again.
We hope you're having a fantastic...
fantastical afternoon.
And...
we'll be back.
We'll be back soon.
Bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye. Yeah.
You're listening to People Powered Radio, proudly supported by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. The Community Broadcasting Foundation resources community-owned and operated media stations just like this one that connect people and tell vital, local stories so that we all enjoy a more vibrant, inclusive Australian culture and healthy democracy. Find out more about our work at cbf.com.au.